Ladies and gentlemen, it's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. I'm John Hogue. Hi, Stacy. We're back at it again, aren't we?
Yes, we are. You can find my good friend John Hogue's daily blogging at hoguewash.com.
Meanwhile, you can find his mostly daily, although some days he skips because he's doing some good shoe leather or other kinds of research reporting. But my friend Stacy has his stuff mostly at theothermccain.com, but he writes for other fine spots around the interwebs as well.
Including the American Spectator. Folks, the world is getting crazier and crazier and crazier. Right now, I'm looking at video from Stone Mountain, Georgia, today. You know, back, we open up with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And back in the day, Lynyrd Skynyrd toured the world with a giant Confederate flag as their backdrop, and nobody said anything. It was just a symbol of regional pride.
Yeah,
it's
just a
Southern rock and roll band.
Just a bunch of rednecks with a Confederate flag.
Yeah, good old boys, never meaning no harm.
Well, I mean, imagine what it would be like if you tried to make the Dukes of Hazzard this year.
Well, anyways, and so I'm watching video right now. Is it right now on my screen at Stone Mountain, Georgia? Antifa is attacking these guys with the Confederate flag, and I'm just like, why do we need to do this? Meanwhile, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, today, the Proud Boys showed up, and it was just they marching down the street with American flags and Trump banners. And I met the Proud Boys, their chairman.
We interviewed him on this show a year and a half ago.
Right. Enrique Torrio is the guy. He took over after Gavin McGinnis stepped down. You know, Gavin McGinnis is suing various people for the hate group label they've slapped on the Proud Boys. Well, anyways, the Proud Boys, and you can see it on the video, they're marching down the street, American flags, and here are the counter-protesters. And the counter-protesters want to start a fight. Well, the Proud Boys don't walk away from a fight. And so I was upset because the way this is being reported in the media, it's violence erupts or violence happens, and it completely obscures the agency of who is engaging in violence, you know. And you know,
on the other hand, look how confused things are now. I mean, you and I grew up in an era where the Confederate flag was looked on as maybe a symbol of redneck pride or regional pride, and now, if you look at it historically, it's the symbol of the last time the Democrats were trying to pull the country apart.
Well, you know, see, I guess it is my good fortune, in a sense, to have come of age in the 1970s. You know, all the radicalism of the 1960s had sort of discredited itself. You know, you went from the Summer of Love to the Manson gang in about 2 years. And you know, you went
what happened was, to sum it up from the point of view of PJ O'Rourke, the sexual revolution happened and the microbes won.
Right. Yeah. And so, So all that peace and love, hippie dippy, progressive crap was completely discredited. And everybody was just kind of like, let's have a good time, you know? And so the idea that racial tensions would be where they are now, it just seemed insane at the time because we had gone through all that. They had been, you know, and everybody was just like, hey, let's get along. Let's, you know, get a job, have a good time. And there was none of this rage that we're seeing now.
Well, depends on where you were.
In the Jimmy Carter era, we had a lot worse problems to worry about than whether someone was having their, you know, a victim of microaggressions or something.
No, it would be actual physical aggressions. I mean, I spent a lot of that era having to do business in places like New York and Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Now, I have some very fond memories of Chicago in the late 70s, particularly since my wife grew up in that area and we had a lot of very wonderful dates in Chicago and its environs. But, you know, it's basically fallen on hard times now. It used to be an interesting place to visit and do business. I can remember lots of times at things like the Consumer Electronics Show or the National Association of Broadcasters Convention and having a wonderful time there. But it's a failing city and a failing state now. And, you know, Margaret Thatcher once observed that the problem with socialist governments is they eventually run out of other people's money. Chicago and Illinois are on the verge of bankruptcy. But I'll add that the morality of the kind of Marxism that you see running places like that always seems to lead to a form of corruption that sucks the moral capital out of any society effects. And you could see that around the country. Chicago, well, you had a piece on the Chicago crime spree this week.
Yes. It has... Oh, I'm sorry. Click the wrong link.
Folks, he has a great memory of what he writes, but he writes so much of it he needs cue cards.
I'm sorry. I was looking at something else. I was trying to figure out what happened in Stone Mountain. Okay, so last Sunday night, actually in the wee hours of Monday morning, widespread looting in downtown Chicago, you had rioters smashing in windows at these high dollar store on what Chicago calls the Magnificent Mile. And they were just openly looting. You know, it was...
Let me put this in the perspective for some of the people. I mean, we're talking about Louis Vuitton and stores like that. I mean, like an Apple store is like on the low end of the kind of place you'd find in the Magnificent Mile.
Yeah, I mean, they were going into these designer chic boutique type places.
Guess who just joined us? Hi, Diana.
Hey, sorry. I just returned from Florida, so...
Oh, well, how are things in the swing state with palm trees?
Well, we didn't see very many palm trees. We were up in the northern part of the state, so all we really saw were pine trees and some deciduous ones.
Well,
I don't
what were you
one.
Doing in that part of Florida?
Dropping my mother off in Crestview with my brother. My brother is taking her back to Louisiana. She's been here for about 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, that was nice that you got to visit with your family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. Whew. So anyway, yeah, we were discussing the joys of Chicago looting.
Yes. Well, yes. Anyways, but so, yes, folks, if you don't know, our good friend Diana lived for a great many years in the San Francisco Bay Area and escaped to, of all places, Valdosta, Georgia, where she lives in a Victorian home that's like on the register of National Register of Historic Places.
I don't think we're registered.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, but it's on the it's on the.
Can't make any changes in the place anyway.
yeah, it's a really swanky there with the live oak in the yard and the Spanish moss hanging down. It's picturesque, I guess. Is
yeah. Whereas I'm a refugee from Southern California. So.
Okay. So speaking of Chicago, meanwhile, after they had looted, and what caused all this, by the way, was that some guy shot at the police, and the police shot back, and the guy was wounded. Then some idiots started a rumor that the police had shot an unarmed kid. And so this rumor leads to looting. And then the looting was bad enough. But then Black Lives Matter Chicago said early Monday's looting of stores was, quote, a form of reparations, close quote, as the group held a protest in support of the more than 100 people arrested.
I mean, you look, a Louis Vuitton bag or a nice new iPad or the opiates out of the Walgreens
right.
are all, I'm sure, wonderful reparations for your great-great-grandfather having
whatever that was. Yes, but 13 police officers were injured in the violence, and an estimated $65 million in property damage.
Well, I mean, somebody showed up with a U-Haul truck to haul things away.
Right, and there were like, there were reportedly only a few hundred people in this mob, like 400 people.
I don't believe that.
A relative handful of people caused $65 million in damage. But the Black Lives Matter is protesting the arrest of these. Quote, Ariel Atkins, a Black Lives Matter organizer, called the looting reparations. Quote, I don't care if somebody decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or a Nike store, because that makes sure that person eats. That makes sure that person has clothes. Anything they wanted to take, they can take it because these businesses have insurance, close quote.
Right. And so the reparations right. ultimately are coming from an insurance company. Wonderful.
Yeah. And what will happen is that, of course, merchants, their insurance rate will go up. Many of these businesses, and I'm told that Macy's is already talking about pulling out of Chicago, that you will drive business out of your community. Now, what do you think is going to happen to your economy?
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen to your economy. It's going to be so hard pressed that the city doesn't have any revenue. And so the city will then demand that the businesses that got burned out pay their back taxes that are owed to get a permit to clear up their demolished stores.
And that's what's happening in New York.
No, that's what's happening in Minneapolis. New York, on the other hand, is just going to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, yeah. Here's a quote I quoted this week from the New York Post. Quote, I don't want to leave, but I don't feel like I have a choice now. This is a resident of the Upper West Side of Manhattan saying, quote, how do I let my children cross the street when homeless people are shooting up? As a parent, this isn't the place I once knew. I feel like New York City is disappearing so fast and no one's doing anything. I don't want to feel afraid, and I don't want my children to be scared to go outside.
Well, let me put it to you like this. Mm-hmm. Connie and I met in the audio business, and we used to go to the Audio Engineering Society convention in New York every autumn. Basically, it was over the last weekend of October, so it would be typically Thanksgiving would happen, not Thanksgiving, Halloween would happen during that weekend. But I can remember we were staying at a relative's house out in Brooklyn and taking the train in and out to where the convention was, I guess it was at the Waldorf that year. And so you can imagine what it was like riding the subway down then to catch the train out to Brooklyn at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And people would look at me and say, "You two are crazy doing that." And I said, "Nah, it's perfectly safe. We just change cars whenever the transit cop does." I mean, and it was that kind of... It was that kind of scary environment. I remember the morning we left to drive back was the this must have been 1980 because it was on the way back we were listening to the radio listening to the election returns with Reagan, on the front page of the New York Times that morning was a story about a bunch of gangbangers who had tried to rob a guy on the train the subway. And this was a little bit different story. The guy apparently fumbled and dropped his wallet. And when the two punks with knives looked up, they were still staring at a .357 Magnum and an FBI badge.
Well, you know, the thing is that I talked about the 1970s. The 1970s were, even though it was a terrible recession, at the time, I mean, it was the whole decade was like one long bummer.
I was trying to start a career during that decade.
Right. Well, anyways, the South during that era was one of the places that was growing because people were just flooding out of the Midwest and the Northeast and coming, I believe it was Louis Grizzard, but it may have been Ludlow Porch who said that interstate highways and air conditioning were the ruin of the South because once you had air conditioning, right, it was okay for Yankees to live there. And then the interstate highways brought them down.
Well, actually, a physician in Mississippi invented air conditioning in 1848. I thought it would be good to keep people from getting malaria, which is probably right because with the windows closed, you wouldn't have mosquitoes. But he didn't know about that. But the point is that, when that after things like TVA and there was enough electricity to power that stuff, the Yankees thought they could come by.
Well, anyways, but you're talking about what New York was like in the 70s, and it continued into the 80s.
And it's headed right back there again.
You know, one of the classic films, and you may not remember this, was the 1979 action film called The Warriors, which was about street gangs fighting. And Ira, you were talking about the subways and how – you know, the gangs traveled by subways to the rumbles. And another, another classic science fiction film from the era was Escape from New York with Snake Plissken. Kurt Russell as Snake Plissken. And we have gone backwards.
Green is upon us.
I mean, it's like, what is going on? People have lost their minds. And Ace of Spades said they've literally killed the cities. This is going to be the most transformative shift in 100 years.
There's one major U.S. city that hasn't changed through all the time. You've still got all the trouble and all the violence in D.C.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, Muriel, what's her name?
Bowser.
Her name is literally Bowser. Mm-hmm. Muriel Bowser. Well, anyways.
Woof.
Okay, so last weekend, there was a block party. Now, Muriel Bowser is enforcing this extreme COVID lockdown. Okay. It's like you can't go anywhere without a mask. no public gatherings of any kind and every, but they managed to have a street party that was advertised on social media, and it was on Dubois Place, now, which is a block long street in an area of Southeast DC. I don't
Anacostia.
Know. Anacostia. Huh?
Anacostia, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, they've got about as much ethnic diversity as Mogadishu. I'll just put it to you that way. So a 17-year-old was killed and an off-duty D.C. police officer suffered life-threatening injuries after authorities said at least 20 people were shot when a dispute broke out early Sunday at a cookout attended by hundreds of people in Southeast Washington. At least three shooters opened fire from different locations about 12:30 a.m. You see, this is 12:30 a.m. And you know, what did your mother say? Nothing good happens after midnight.
Ever okay. Happens after midnight.
Yeah. You don't want to be out after midnight because the good people are all at home after midnight.
But that doesn't mean good things aren't happening at home.
Well, anyways,
at home.
They quoted the mother, the 17-year-old who was shot was named Christopher Brown. Quote, "I really don't understand how my child's life is just gone," said the victim's mother, Arteca Brown, 33. Now, pause there for a minute here. Arteca Brown is 33. Her son, who got shot dead at the party, 17. That means she was 16 when he was born. And by the way, the 17-year-old who was shot dead is already a father. Yes, and leaves behind a pregnant girlfriend. So that's, you know, so he will have a posthumous. But you know, I don't know if that's related to the fact of gunfire breaking out at the street party amid the COVID epidemic.
Actually, in a sense, it is. Remember I talked about sucking the moral capital out of a society?
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of cities and states that have very, very strict laws, for example, about gun control,
mm-hmm.
that have overwhelming gun violence. And then they blame the gun violence on the fact that the guns come from, well, Chicago blames their gun violence on guns coming from Indiana. Well, if there's a problem with about guns in Indiana, why doesn't Indiana have all that gun violence?
Exactly.
And so there must be some cultural difference between Indiana and Chicago that causes this problem to be
one
so
of the
lopsided.
Things that I have seen, and it was, I forget who wrote this, but pointed out that on a game preserve in Africa, right? Okay. That they had a problem with these young bull elephants, just being antisocial, attacking the herd, causing violence within the herd. Well, then they brought in some old bulls, okay? And the old bulls stopped the young bulls from running rampant. So the point being that fatherhood matters, okay, is that young boys need to be socialized. And by socialized, I mean they need their little butts whipped once in a while.
Mothers love their sons.
Yes.
But they cannot teach them to be a man.
Mm-hmm. And you get, if you talk to middle-class black parents, okay, their greatest fear can be summed up in two words, the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because even though they move to the suburbs, right? You know, they move to the suburbs, they move to a small town, they're trying to get away from this violence. there is this downdraft, crabs in a bucket, you know, is that, you know, you go off to college, you get your education, you get a good job, you get a house in the suburbs, right? But your kids come along and there is this undertow that is trying to drag them down. And, Bill Cosby had this problem with his son, right? His daughters, he talked about the fact that his daughters go off, they get the degree, they're doing it, but his sons, man, they want to go to the streets, you know? And so Theo was the boy's name, you remember, but yes, it's, this is something, this is a sociological phenomenon. And so when you have this lack of a proper adult authority, the absence of responsible fatherhood, okay, and the authority that is invested in the father, that is what is missing.
Well, not only that, but there, I grew up in a place where if I had been misbehaving,
right,
my neighbor two houses down the street would have intervened, right? And you don't see that kind of, it's not so
it
much.
It used to be.
It's not so much that it takes a village. It's just that there's some things that you kids, you just don't get away with. And you don't get away with it in the presence of your friends' parents either.
Oh, they'd call your mama. Yeah. Oh, if the school had to call your mama, oh boy, never mind what the school did to you. Well, your mama was going to tear you up.
Well, or even worse, if they called your dad.
Mom calls dad, and then you are in so
Oh, you are in trouble. So much trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, if mom has to bring in dad, it's bad.
Anyway, but, you know, there's some other community things that happen. For example, I grew up in a place where the response time of actually when I was a kid, the sheriff eventually getting a deputy out to where there might be a problem was such that they would probably need to send an ambulance as well, because if the person were doing violence, he would have been dealt with. And basically, you know, there's the bumper sticker, fight crime, shoot back.
Right.
That, you know, there are immediate consequences to that sort of thing. And that's the reason why gun sales are through the roof.
Right.
But the other thing that's interesting this week in terms of civil rights is the Ninth Circuit. This is an unintended.
The Ninth, what Mark Levin always calls the Ninth Circus of Schlemiels.
Yes. But the Ninth Circus, which now has 10 judges appointed by President Trump, the Ninth Circuit ruled in favor of the Second Amendment this week and struck down the state of California's ban on standard capacity magazines. Now, I'm sure the state will appeal that to an en banc thing by the court, and you may not have enough righteous votes in that case. But this sets up, if it sticks, this sets up a conflict between the circuits, the Ninth Circuit versus the Fourth Circuit, where I live. Okay. The Fourth Circuit supported Maryland's ban. So,
you know, but
now you have two circuits with different rulings, and that's the way you get the Supreme Court to take a case.
Well, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm looking, and as a journalist,
I'm looking at it as a life member of the NRA.
Well, I'm looking at this story in the Associated Press, which you linked to from your blog, Hogwash.com, mm-hmm. I should say. I'm reading through this, and except for the court's opinion, no one in support of the ruling, in other words, it's all criticism. It's the Brady campaign. It's every town. It's Gavin Newsom. The whole story is of people trying to say that, oh, this is a terrible thing, that what they have done.
You know, hold it. It may be that these people actually believe that it's a terrible thing to allow people to have standard capacity magazines for their firearms. Okay, go through the state, get 38 states to agree with you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and look,
they talked to some. Anyway, curious about why the Associated Press didn't call up somebody from CalGuns. I mean, CalGuns was supporting this case all the way through.
I think it has something to do with the narrative.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! They're rioting in Chicago again. I'm watching video where a rioter attacks a cop with a skateboard. The cop strikes back with the riot baton, and I think the skateboarder got what he deserved.
An expert with a riot baton is somebody you don't want to deal with unless you're 30 feet away and have a firearm.
Hey, you know, where is Mayor Daley when we need him?
Dead.
Yeah, that's what. Oh, yeah, but he can still vote, though. But this, you know, I want 1968 to happen in the streets. Mm. That's what I want to see.
Well, it'll be in Milwaukee this year.
Yeah,
and it'll be interesting because the Democrats haven't been able to get enough police departments to sign on to provide security. So it's going to be an interesting time. And you know what? People can read about your interesting coverage of the event in the other McCain, but if they're going to do that, it would be a nice gesture on their part to use the yellow button.
Yes, folks, this is the time of the show where we resort to shameless capitalism. If you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, there are three columns. Near the top of the center column is the yellow donate button. It says the word donate on there. And as I have sometimes pointed out, is speaking as a grammarian, you will notice that there is no question mark after the word donate. So therefore, it's an imperative command. So if you will click on the yellow donate button, it will take you to PayPal.com, where you can contribute to the support of the blog and also the podcast and sundry other expenses, namely to keep my wife happy, which is job number one for me. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's site, Hoguewash.com.
You can look over there in the sidebar on the right and click on the icon of a tip jar and be taken off to my PayPal account where you can deliver sustenance and support to the blog or this podcast. And by the way, this is not done on one of those free podcasting shtick things. We pay for this in order to get extra support and better quality whatever's, but this isn't for
that
free,
explains
folks.
The quality of the sound.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Is it better?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, actually,
the
levels and what's interesting is it's only about 87% of the cost of the previous service. Mm-hmm. However, we don't have the telephone dial-in line up and running yet, and that's going to add an additional expense. So if folks want to be able to call in via telephone rather than the Podbean app, some nice support would help support that. Meanwhile, you can scroll down and the blog and sidebar and see this picture of the funny looking hat there. Click on that, go to the Hoguewash store, buy all sorts of interesting things that, well, I'm pretending they're interesting things that support the blog because they've got they have stuff on them that's related to the blog. But regardless of how you choose to help support us, you need to remember the five most important words in the English language.
The five most important words in the English language are hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. Now,
gentlemen.
Yes, and while you're over at Hoguewash, getting ready to click on that icon of the tip jar. You can also scroll down, and if you get to August 11th, you'll see a short piece that I put up while just after I was listening to the hearing in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. They put the hearing for the N. Ray Michael Flynn mandamus petition with the entire court out on, they had the audio out on YouTube. And I was listening to it and I heard one really interesting, I mean, like, this is for me the money quote of that hearing. At least I thought so on that day. And it turned out maybe it really was when the acting Solicitor General, Jeff Wall, said, he was trying to explain to the court why what had been put in the motion to dismiss contained sufficient information about why the dismissal was going, but not necessarily everything exhaustively that the Attorney General knew about the case. And he said, the Attorney General sees this in context of non-public information. It may be possible that the Attorney General had before him information that he was not able to share with the court. And boy, howdy, was that true.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit later in the week, as a matter of fact, yesterday, we had the first guilty plea basically getting copped to in the Russia collusion hoax.
And yes.
Kevin Kleinsmith, who was one of the DOJ lawyers who lied on a FISA warrant application,
altered an email. He committed forgery.
Well, you know, basically, it's interesting. It's and this is one of the reasons why I believe he copped a plea. He's charged with 18 U.S.C. 1001. Which is false statements, okay? And you go to jail for 5 years for that.
Ask Scooter Libby.
But, I mean, you can go to jail for 5 years for that. But the thing is, he altered evidence in a criminal proceeding.
Yeah.
That is a separate crime. So he could have been charged with that. And it's a 20-year potential sentence. So the fact that he's getting off with the lighter charge obviously to me means the guy's rolled over and is singing. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, basically, I guess I can sum this up by saying everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
Yeah. And there is talk. We know who he is apparently going to take down. McCabe is what they're talking about.
Either that or Priestow.
It couldn't happen to a nicer person, could it?
Well, if they're, you know, I don't want to get ahead of the game. We will see what we see when we see it.
But it's going to be an interesting next couple of... Let me throw out some other things that I put in response to a comment on my blog about what I thought was going on. There is a tradition. It's not a hard and fast a rule or regulation, but there's a tradition that the Department of Justice does not charge a candidate for federal office with a crime 60 days before an election. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, 60 days before the next election is the Friday before the Memorial Day weekend. So I'm telling you that by the end of this month, we're probably going to see a bunch of indictments coming down. Grand jury got itself in gear about 2 weeks ago in D.C. By the way, some of these things, for example, that might have happened at places like Langley, Virginia, or Fort Meade, Maryland, wouldn't be chargeable in D.C. You would need the district court in Maryland or the Eastern District of Virginia to impanel grand juries for some of those crimes. So basically, The other thing that happens is, if you remember, Richard Nixon was never charged with a crime. So there's a thing about not charging former presidents. And Barr has said that neither Biden nor Obama are targets. But now that they know who is and who isn't a vice presidential nominee, they know, for example, that Susan Rice isn't a candidate. They know that several other people aren't candidates. And so the potential target list is now more is well defined, and I believe we'll see stuff before Labor Day.
Well,
but I could be wrong. I often am.
I'm sitting here watching video now of this riot in Chicago, and there was not one night, but two nights of looting. And the police have apparently decided they're just not going to take this. And so they have, and so right now they're dispersing the crowd. This is law and order, folks. It's making a comeback.
Well, I think you have to understand the way Chicago has worked since roughly the mid 80s. It's been basically run by the gangs. The various gangs are in with various aldermen and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just that the biggest, most well-equipped gang in Chicago is the police department. And you know, this is a turf war.
Yeah. It's
Chicago's equivalent of the deep state. And, you know, it's the deep state either being brought to heel in some cases or finally deciding that they've had enough and are going to push back and defend their turf that is going to make the end of this year interesting. It's also interesting.
Well, as long as they stay away from the museums, as long as they stay especially away from the field, and as long as they don't touch Sue.
The Museum of Science and Industry, they got to leave it alone. But,
that as well. But that's way the heck out there. The field isn't very far away from the Magnificent Mile.
Or the Art Institute.
And neither is the Aquarium or the Art Institute. In fact, the Art Institute's right downtown.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's full of beautiful things.
Yeah. Well, or but for that matter, the Lyric. They need to stay away from the Lyric as well. But, you know, the other thing is that you're seeing who the deep state is now willing to throw overboard because they're no longer useful. I had a piece up as actually was a repeat of something that I ran 3 years ago, which was actually had to do with a Freedom of Information Act request from 2015. Stacy, do you remember a guy named Brett Kimberlin?
Yeah, kind of rings a bell.
Yeah, he sued the two of us. And one of the things he claimed that we did was that our truthful reporting about him caused him and his not-for-profit Justice for Music project to have their business relationship with the State Department severed. So I filed a Freedom of Information Act request saying, can you tell me about what if any, contracts or other arrangements you had with Mr. Kimberlin or Justice for Music project? And I won't read the entire letter they sent me back.
Dear Mr. Hogue, I refer to your communication dated October 18th, 2014, requesting blah, blah, blah.
And basically the TLDR was, we won't admit to having anything to do with him.
So maybe he was working for the CIA.
Well,
it was a clandestine undercover operation.
Well, no, actually there are pictures of him making presentations to people at a State Department run thing about bringing people in from various third world countries and teaching them how to use social media. Okay, here's my response from after I've had a few more years to think about it. Well, okay, that's the State Department, and the Freedom of Information Act deals with activities when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So maybe the information was on a wiped server in some bathroom closet. Or it may be that Kimberlyn is no longer seen as useful by the deep state, or he may have been lying, or perhaps the correct conjunction to use is and.
And. But also be aware that this sort of thing where somebody gets, where somebody is invited in to speak ain't a contract. And half of the time it's like the State Department sends out a general invitation. If you have a nonprofit and you want to share with our partners who are coming in from various countries, please come and give a presentation. And you have like 5 minutes.
Yes,
and then you're out of there, and the next person's up. That's a contract is nonsense. That's not how it, I'm sorry, but this is the sort of thing where people, this is how you make yourself sound more important. You go to these things and you do give your 3 to 5 minute presentation and you have your friends snap pictures of it and put it up on your website, but you don't, you know, and that's how you get a buzz that you're important, you're involved, people listen to you, and therefore more people listen to you. But you have to do it in a really sustained way. And as far as I could tell, he was much too lazy to do that. So,
yes, there's a lot of that. Anyway, speaking of other suspected pedophiles who have connections to the Democrats.
Oh. Yeah. I don't want to see now, John, you've got to understand my headline. Michigan Democrats nominate alleged gay pedophile for Congress. Okay, now we've got to be clear about what is alleged here, because there's no allegation about John Hoadley of Michigan being a gay Democrat. He is open, out, and proudly gay. The allegation part, let's see. Let me quote the story. A Michigan lawmaker and rising star, rising star in the Democratic Party, who is running for Congress in one of the nation's most contested seats, discussed drug use and sex in a now-deleted blog where he also published derogatory comments about women and creepy remarks about children in underwear. Now, I don't know. Your mileage may vary in terms of what you would consider evidence of such a serious charge. See, I personally would never call someone a pedophile, because I other people may do that, and some people have alleged, the phrase used is potential pedophilia, and that's actually used by Jen Richardson, who is the Democrat who lost the Democratic primary to John Hoadley, Michigan Democrat, who likes to blog about children in their underwear. I don't know. I'm going to quote Jen Richardson in full here in her concession statement. Quote, I am also very concerned by the alleged behaviors of Representative Hoadley exposed yesterday, and do not find acceptable the casual dismissal of misogyny, use of meth, and potential pedophilia as quote unquote bad poetry. We must hold our elected officials accountable for their actions and to the highest standards of integrity, end quote, said Jen Richardson.
Are you sure she's a Democrat?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, it's not your mother's Democratic Party anymore. It's not your father's Democratic Party.
Actually, my mother's Democratic Party fell apart in 1992.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I can't. My mother was never voted for a Republican, except once she voted for a high school friend running for school board and was sorry that she did. And it was an embarrassment for the rest of wife, but I came home to visit her in the fall of 1992, and she was crying about the presidential election. And she was basically just saying, I can't bring myself to vote for the draft dodger. And she never voted. She never voted after that. You know, she lived another 11 years and never cast another vote. So yeah, my mother's Democratic Party was probably best categorized as the Democratic Party of Harry Truman.
Yes, John Hoadley is on the board of the Michigan Democratic Party's Justice Caucus, he is also on the board of directors of an HIV AIDS campaign, and he lives in, of all places, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Well, that's the middle of the state.
With his partner, Chris. And as I said, he's running for Congress. He's running for Congress against Fred Upton. Now, Fred Upton is an old line Republican, some say he's a bit too old, he's been in office quite a long time, and that is in the 6th Congressional District of Michigan. So, folks, if you are living in the 6th Congressional District of Michigan, you might want to pay attention to John Hoadley and his, quote, potential pedophilia. That's a quote, folks. Potential pedophilia, said Jen Richardson, who is a Democrat.
Well, let me put it to you like this. This has been an interesting week for the Democrats, because at least we found out who Biden's handlers have picked for his VP nomination. And actually, it brings about, my initial reaction was it brought about a question and a statement. The question was, is there a feminine form for the word scoundrel? And of course, my statement was my usual, everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. It's been obvious to me since March or so that Harris was the only one that was the one who would be the least damaging. But I think...
do you know what? Praising with faint dams, my dear. Honestly.
Yeah. But on the other hand, by the way, folks, I'm sure you're enjoying listening Marley. To Marley in the background.
Hello, Marley.
Stacy, by the way, is going ape and has run off to try to find out what Marley's problem is. Meanwhile, one of the things that has struck me about this whole thing about picking Harris, and there was a post put up titled, I can't figure out why Biden picked Kamala by a blogger by the name of Bookworm Room. And he basically wrote, I really tried hard to figure out what Kamala brings to the ticket, and I'm stumped. Here are all the things that I think are problems with Kamala. What's stunning is that these problems cut across the entire political spectrum of America, and it's hard to see how anyone could like her. And then he's got like 9 different topics. You know, she isn't an African American. Her mother's from India, her father's from Jamaica, and from a family of slave owners. And even though she was born in California, she was raised in Canada. 2, her husband's Jewish, and even though she speaks out in favor of Israel's right to self-defense, she also favors the Iran nuclear deal, which would give Israel's existential enemy nukes. Her husband's a white male. As Tulsi Gabbard pointed out, she's been the scourge of the underclass when she was district attorney in San Francisco and the state attorney general of California. locking folks up for weed and for truancy violations by their kids.
Their children's truancy violations, not theirs. Their children's.
Right.
She, and mostly single mothers.
Well, she was so unpopular in the primaries that she dropped out before anybody voted on anything. She's a hard leftist whose Marxist views don't play well with either of the moderates that are left in the Democratic Party. They ain't going to go well with swing voters. Her attacks on Catholic judges haven't been received very well by both the practicing Catholics left in the Democratic Party, and ain't going to attract a lot of religious swing voters. And, you know, she's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and her intellectual shortcomings are going to be real obvious when she debates, if there's a debate with Vice President Pence. And she's got this terrible voice. She sounds like a scolding Karen. So why did she get the nomination?
That's who she is.
Why did she get the nomination? And I think it's an example of a very, very basic principle of management. First-rate people hire first-rate people, and second-rate people hire third-rate people. And come November, we're going to find out whether the American people are first-rate or second-rate.
Well, I tell you what, folks. One of the things is, see, now I have been following, you know, I started following the Democratic primaries in March of 2019 when I went out on the campaign trail to cover the longest of long shots, the darkest of dark horses, because that's how you do it. Marianne Williamson, you remember, I went traveled to South Carolina to cover Marianne Williamson on the campaign trail. When however you pronounce it, because by the way, if you mispronounce it, you're racist.
You're a racist.
Racist, yes.
Five A's.
Yeah, there are five A's in race, and they did that to Tucker Carlson this week. But anyways, one of the things that came up when right after she entered the race was something called ADOS. Okay, that's an acronym, ADOS. You can Google it. It's also used as a hashtag.
American Descendants of Slaves.
American Descendants of Slavery,
right,
is how they call it. But it's a phrase that was started by two black podcasters, Yvette Carroll and Antonio Moore. And it refers to the distinction between someone like Barack Obama, whose mother was white and whose father was Kenyan, as opposed to someone whose ancestors were enslaved in America. Now, to you and I, and probably to most white people in America, this distinction doesn't make any sense, or we don't, who cares who your ancestors were? Well, it matters for those black people who are specifically concerned about the reparations. And I don't mean just reparations as, you know, the government's going to give you money for being black, but the idea of social justice, right? The idea that if the 1619 Project, right, you know, which is the idea that America owns a debt to the descendants of former slaves. Well, who is a descendant, you see, begins to matter that way. And one of the things they have pointed out is that when you're talking about elite institutions, affirmative actions, quotas for diversity, whatever you want to call it, these elite institutions like Columbia University, which is Obama's alma mater, and Harvard Law School, Obama's alma mater, they're willing to take descendants of immigrants rather than descendants of slaves to fill in their quota of people of color. So you have Kamala Harris, right, who's, as you say, her mother is from India. Her father is from Jamaica, and her father's ancestors, some of them owned slaves. And she grew up in Quebec, okay? She was born in Berkeley, where her, or Oakland, I don't know.
Oakland.
Yeah, she was born in Oakland while her parents were attending UC Berkeley. And but then when she was, I think, 12 years old, when her parents divorced, she and her mother moved to Quebec. So she grew up in Canada. So the idea that this child of neither of her parents were American, okay, and she grew up in Quebec. So how is she supposed to relate culturally, right, to the run-of-the-mill African-American, which is about 40 million people in this country, in her historical experience, her cultural experience has nothing to do with that.
She's going to not play well. And the question is, how many blacks are going to stay home, and how many blacks are going to vote for Kanye, and how many blacks are going to vote for Trump?
Well, you know, and this is one of the things. I've got a post right now at the top of my blog called "The Battle for the Survival of the United States of America is Upon Us," and it's quoting Abe Greenwald from commentary talking about this radicalism that has burst out and this identity politics. Yesterday, I interviewed, and I'll be transcribing that interview to Evan Sayet. Evan Sayet has a new book out, and he's good. Yes, and he's talking about this the woke supremacy is the title of his book. And by the way, he points out that the cover of the woke supremacy it simply reverses the colors of Mao's Little Red Book, you know, because Mao's Little Red Book had the title stamped in gold. Well, this it's gold with the red title on it and the American flag. But the point
is, I still have my copy of Mao's Little Red Book.
So. Oh my God! Yeah. Oh yeah. The training and indoctrination, right?
No, I actually picked it up.
A souvenir.
I picked it up from a hippie who dropped it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, but the thing is that this racial conflict that we're having in this country is whose fault is it besides the media, or the political system, because most people I know, right? Yeah. Most people I know get along fine with everybody of every other race.
But, at least what we've got is a situation where the choice is clear.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us to the possibility that you could recycle a couple of campaign slogans from the past. I mean, basically, the Democrats are offering us a choice, not an echo.
Thank you.
And Trump could really run, go back a century exactly and run on a return to normalcy.
Oh, no. But that would be Warren Harding. And we don't want to.
Warren Harding.
And that did not end well for Republicans.
I don't know. It ended well.
Coolidge.
Yeah, but.
Coolidge, there's a case to be made for Coolidge being one of the two or three greatest presidents of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Coolidge was a great guy.
Coolidge is right up there in a different way with FDR and in the same way with Reagan. So,
yeah. But crazy people are dangerous.
Yes. And I get to do the crazy people are dangerous this week. I had a post up that goes, I'm not making this up, And it was about a BuzzFeed post titled Facebook's Preferential Treatment of U.S. Conservatives Puts His Fact-Changing Program in Danger.
preferential what? Treatment.
Yeah.
Of conservatives.
Yeah. Facebook's.
Right. How come all my conservative friends are always getting blocked, banned, and put on probation? Come on.
I will just say that Hogwash is one of the websites that Facebook censors. So I'm informed that Facebook users have not been allowed to link to my posts. It's apparently I'm one of the crazy people who's dangerous, according to and BuzzFeed thinks they're favoring me.
Well, yeah, BuzzFeed, that's a dangerous kind of crazy, and we're only weeks away from election day. The left is running around with their hair on fire, claiming that Trump is attacking the post office. And I don't even understand the accusation, you know. But anyways, but folks, you can hear that boogie woogie rock and roll sound in the background. That means we are approaching the end of the show. We'd like to thank the lovely Diana for joining us, and we will be back the same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern for the other podcast.
Yes, and we'll see you folks later. Good night, folks.
Mr. Breeze.
Hey, you know, Stacy, one of the cool things about being on Podbean instead of BTR is that we can run over and we've got the extra time that I can just run this thing out to the end.
Okay.